Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon Central Time, and there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome once again to Connecting Faith. I always enjoy your company. I'm Neil Stavem, Ryan Thomas at the controls, Grace right there at the phones. We're ready for a great hour. Should mention that we are about ready to launch a writing contest.
Oh, yes. So the excitement is palpable.
There's information online. You can find out about that. It's our second annual Faith Radio Writing Contest. And we have an opening sentence for which you can finish up the story, 700 to 1,000 words. And the opening sentence is, in many ways, it made perfect sense.
Ah.
So people probably won't be writing about this show. No, that's not true. Today's program will be sensible and practical and useful and thought-provoking and and it might be something where, Ryan, by the end of the hour, you and I could figure out how to get along even better.
I'm very excited about that.
We're going to talk about sticking points, and this is not about using glue of any kind.
Okay.
Just to clarify.
Not sticky notes.
No, not sticky notes.
Okay.
No. Sticking points, how to get four generations working together in the 12 places they come apart. That's the title a book by our guest today, Hayden Shaw, who's a leading expert on understanding generational differences and transforming negative work environments and employees. Full-time speaker and consultant for Franklin Covey, specializing in leadership, execution, and personal productivity methodologies. And we should clarify this, not execution. I think we talked about that last time. Hayden is back with us. We had a great time talking with him a while back. You can find out more about him, his work and writings at the website mygenerationalcoach.com. He does coaching, management consulting, and development, and does some regular blogging now for the Huffington Post. And we're honored to have him back with us to talk about sticking points. Hayden, good to talk with you again.
Good afternoon.
We want to find out a little bit, kind of to set the stage and review the discussion about the generational differences in the workplace. I'm curious, I guess, if this interest of yours has become sort of a specialty for you as a business consultant, that did this come out of your own experience, maybe working with different generations on the job and finding a few different ways of doing things?
It did come out of my own experience. It came out in two areas. The first is it came out growing up. Hmm. I remember my father, a traditionalist, being frustrated with us younger people. I was a younger boomer, older Xer. I'm right there in the cusp of those two generations. And he would complain I'd have on some kind of pretty laid-back music on the communal record player.
Sure.
That was back in the day before you had your own.
Yeah.
And on the communal record player, and he'd come home from work and complain that B.J. Thomas was the corruption of the teenage mind. And while I love my father, we would argue like all teenagers do, but I was often baffled at why some things that were so, I thought, well, hey, if you've not heard Rhinoceros, if you think this is bad. And so that was part of it that threw me off. And the other part is I actually am an ordained minister and started some churches in the early days before people had figured out some of the some of the contemporary kinds of things. When everybody was trying to figure out what to do with the boomers because they had dropped going to church by half, and so generational research became really important in for churches. And so that was the second reason I got really fascinated by it and never quit reading about it.
And it has, it continues to. Well, maybe we should back up. I mean, was this an issue? A century ago, I mean, back in the 1800s, for example, I mean, where we worried about getting generations to work together in the workplace.
A little, if you go back and review For example, watch Ken Burns' History of Jazz. You'll see that when swing came out, you know, people were writing about swing what they were writing about rock and roll. And it was going to corrupt children. And of course, there was, some tensions between the generations around dress and hemlines because good girls didn't show an ankle and dresses went up with the hairstyles got cut short. And there was a lot of drinking before the Prohibition and even afterwards. And so there were tensions between the generations both. But in the workplace, it really was the golden rule. He who has the gold makes the rules. And there was a stronger sense of deferring. The younger generation deferring to the older generation. And the baby boomers came along and just literally dismantled the classic deference pyramid, to use the buzzword that sociologists use, of who has to defer to who. Who has to let who make the call?
I don't know if I've ever heard that. The deference pyramid. I kind of like it. I feel like I've maybe missed out on some of this. I don't know.
That's right. You could next time around the office, you can say, "Hey, Hayden explained in the deference pyramid that somebody around here has to defer to me sometime."
So far, Ryan is in my sights. I think just
I feel the pressure.
Sure. Well,
Ryan, I'm not helping you, man. I'm not helping you.
It's all right. You've got a whole 45 minutes left of the show to
sure,
help out.
Sure. We'll get around to it. So now, the boomers were. We're a pretty large group, so coming into the workplace really changed a lot of things. But the millennials now are what, equally as large, or just about as large, right?
So they're already slightly larger.
Okay.
And with immigration, they will be the largest generation we've ever seen in the United States.
So we've got a lot of influences. Maybe competing influences in the workplace. You're a business consultant now. You work in this area. Is this maybe the question that you get when you're talking with businesses about, how to increase productivity or, just whatever it is around the workforce? It seems to boil down to these areas.
Honestly, no. Most workforces see it as one of the factors of what they're dealing with to increase productivity. Lack of trust, 17 goals rather than two, and so the inability to execute because of too many targets, and people not necessarily having the leadership or management skills that's needed to move a group willingly forward. All of those are the questions that come up most often. Occasionally, and occasionally meaning, probably about one out of every five questions from leaders are, "Hey, what do we do with this younger generation?" It comes up in the larger discussions. But to answer your question very forthrightly and directly, business people are usually more concerned about the bottom line, and then once they get talking, realize, "Hey, there may be an impact to that with these generational differences." It's kind of the hidden business issue of the next decade.
And as you said, the next decade is not something that's going away, right? It didn't just sort of pop on the scene and it'll be gone in a couple of years.
Here's why it's not going away. Succession planning is the most obvious kind of concentration point of where the generational differences come to play. Because the baby boomers are already leaving. Economists estimate that if the boomers who are unemployed hadn't have just called it retirement and were still looking for a job, unemployment would be another 1.5 to 2 percentage points higher. And so the great retirement of the boomers is beginning. It's upon us, and somebody has to take their spots. And so that leaves Generation X and the millennials to do that. And so that will keep us busy for the next decade. And if generations roll out every 20 years, just about the time we get get our feet underneath us, there'll be a whole new generation in the workplace to give us some opportunities to grow, develop, and change.
Maybe we just do a little background. We're talking about four generations that are together in the workplace, maybe for the first time. Let's review who we're talking about, and then we'll get into more detail coming up.
Sounds great. Traditionalists. Now, there aren't that many in the workplace. Only about 2%, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, are still in the workplace. But traditionalists, those are folks born before World War II, born before 1945. And then the baby boomers, that huge generation, born 1946 through 1964. And then the Xers, 65 through 80. And the Millennials, 81 through 2001. Called the Millennials because, you know, the tail end of that generation was born right at the new millennium.
They're all together in the workforce. And, you know, I think we know sociologically that we have, I mean, these are, what, the 20-year gaps. But, I mean, in reality, we probably have a affinity window, if you will, much smaller than that, right, in terms of our maybe our lifestyles, our interests, those kinds of things.
That's fair. Some sociologists break it down into actually eight generations rather than four, because there are greater differences between an early boomer than a later boomer. And, you know, in my book, Sticking Points, I even mention that in the chapter on boomers that, you know, early rock and roll that gets all the attention and Woodstock was actually not the experience of the later boomers. And they don't, you know, they were watching Brady Bunch as much as they were watching Wait Till Your Father Gets Home or Leave It to Beaver. And so they, 20 years is a long time to have influences. And so I just refer to it as first wave and second wave. It gets really complicated to try to remember and juggle eight when there's actually more similarities with the boomers than there are differences with those two ends of the generation. But you're right. We tend to be concentrated around the 4 or 5 years when we where we were growing up and the key influences that shaped us.
We're talking about how those influences have shaped us and how that spills over into the workplace. And we'll do more in just a moment with Hayden Shaw. Hayden uses humor and examples, and will show us how to apply a five-step process to the 12 sticking points where the four generations tend to come apart. The book is called Sticking Points. And Hayden Shaw is spends his time helping businesses, organizations, and even families, I think, to help understand this intergenerational differences. We'll get to that and more in a moment with Hayden. I invite you to join the conversation, too. Maybe you're in a work environment or even in families. I'd just like to kind of work through some of these sticking points a little bit better, and we'll talk about some of those from dress code, communication, to meetings and policies and all that just ahead. Our number, by the way, is 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Or you can go to myfaithradio.com and click on the Connecting Faith show page. There's an email link there and drop us a note. 877-93-FAITH. We've got three copies of Hayden's book to give away. If you'd like to just sign up for that, we'll do a little drawing at the end of the hour and it'll be a great resource for you. You'll be pretty fascinated by the conversation, the discussion that the book contains. And I hope that you'll stay with us and join us with a phone call, too, in a minute. 877-93-FAITH.
It's encouragement and hope for your daily journey.
I think life is difficult enough, and it's really good when your day is going wrong or when your day is going right, that you can either rejoice with what you're listening to or hold on to what you're listening to. And I have two small children, and it makes a difference to them. It changes my day, and it changes my life, and it strengthens my walk with the Lord, and I want to show and model that to my children.
Connecting your faith to your everyday life. Thanks for growing with us on Faith Radio.
Next time on First Person, a young man dedicating his life to a radio ministry in Mongolia.
To see my country being influenced by the Judeo-Christian ethics, the morals, and the values that we can set our course ahead so that, you know, our country can become a major contributor for our missions.
Hear more about Mongolia next time on First Person.
Listen for First Person, Saturdays at 10 a.m. on Faith Radio.
It's 18 past the hour. This is Connecting Faith. We've connected again with Hayden Shaw. Appreciate his insights. He is a popular business speaker, generational expert, and he has worked with thousands of companies, businesses, nonprofit organizations, government agencies, specializing in generational differences, change management, leadership, personal productivity, and trust, and has written an insightful book called Sticking Points, How to Get Four Generations Working Together in the 12 places they come apart. And it seemed like it would be good to review those 12 places. I want to just mention, too, if you'd like to join in the conversation, it's 877-933-2484. And we've got some copies of the book to give away, and you'll want to sign up for one as we go on with our discussion. Hayden, let's talk about some of those dozen areas where, you know, maybe we've been having a little challenge at work and didn't realize that this is one of the reasons behind it.
Well, there are 12 of them. Let me run through them in alphabetical order real fast. Communication. Why won't they put away their phone and make eye contact? Decision making. How many years do I have to sit here before they'll listen to me? Dress code. What's wrong with flip-flops if I'm not meeting with clients? Feedback. Where will I find the time to give all the feedback they think they should get? Fun at work. When did work have to be fun? Knowledge transfer. How do we get the know-how to the next generation when nobody writes it down? Meetings. Why can't we send an email and cut the report outs and the icebreakers at the meetings? Policies. With four generations here, how can we hope to come up with a policy that doesn't make some generation mad? Respect. Why don't those younger employees think they have to pay their dues before they start telling us what we should be doing? Training. How do we keep four generations engaged in the same training? Work ethic. Do they really think I'm going to put my life on hold and work late every week? And loyalty. Why don't people stay around anymore?
Are these issues that are more of a concern for, say, the traditionalists and the baby boomer than they are for... I mean, if we were writing the list today, would it be would somebody that was a millennial write the list differently, or maybe put in a different? Of course, it's alphabetical order, but I'm just wondering if these are our problems as boomers as opposed to millennials.
You know, that's a great question. Nobody's ever asked it quite that way. So let me kind of reflect on that out loud a little bit. If we were to put them in order for the ones that come up most often. It would be work ethic, loyalty, respect, feedback, and communication would be the top five. And work ethic is definitely brought – work ethic and loyalty are definitely brought up by the older two generations more than the younger generations. Communication and why – you know, why do they lock down our computers so we can't add – software that would make our jobs better. That would definitely be a. And what is wrong with texting in that I'm not coming into work today, I'm sick? Why does my boss insist on a phone call? What is wrong with texting? I've got their cell phone number. And so communication, respect is definitely something the younger generations say. How long do you have to be around here before somebody takes you seriously? And so respect comes from both directions, but especially comes from younger folks that'll ask that question. So I think of the top five. Some of them come down the ages; others go up from the younger to the older.
You know, I want to talk about. It seems like people are moving a lot faster in the workforce, or they're not staying at their jobs. As long. In fact, we were just talking before that, 3 years is a long-term employee now, right? I mean, so what is that doing for maybe some of these issues? Does that just add to it, or is that just a sort of a contributing factor perhaps of a changing workplace?
Yes. How about that?
Okay.
Right. Helpfully concrete and specific.
Yes.
I think both of those are true. And I think that's really the advantage of generational research, getting some surveys and some real data, is it helps us get out of stereotypes and kind of generational urban legends. Because when you see that people are leaving your organization and the folks that are leaving tend to be younger, you say, look at that. Based on my observations and experience, the younger generation isn't loyal. Well, when you do the research on it, you discover a couple of things. First of all, as you just mentioned, the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics uses 3 years on the job to be a for long-term employees. That's what they use to figure long-term employment. And so we stay less than all of us stay less and for shorter times than we did before. Secondly, when you get into the research, you realize that baby boomers have had nine jobs in their careers. They just had most of the jobs before they turned 40. Once we get into the life stage where we get older, we tend to move less often. We're more, we have friendships we've developed over our lifetime. We like where we live. Our children get to be close by to us as we get older, and so we're less likely to move. And so when you put that factor into it, you realize, oh, I see, we did move a lot more often than we remember. And so generational research helps us sort out the difference between, is society changing and we all move jobs more often? Yes. And are we just remembering inaccurately how often we moved? And the answer to that would be yes. And so finally, to this long-winded answer, let me add one more part. Do the millennials change jobs more often than the Xers or the boomers? Yes, but not that much more often. And so understanding that helps us get out of the stereotypes of saying young people aren't reliable, they're not loyal.
And I was thinking, you talked about, you know, boomers having nine jobs before 40. I mean, I would assume probably part of that is that they've moved within the same company as well. So, I mean, in terms
of... They worked for nine different organizations.
Oh, okay. Just we did all our little, little odd jobs, right, back when we were starting out and just worked our way up. So.
That's right. And so definitely Xers will have more employers, more W-2s in their lives than the boomers did. And the millennials will have even more because, the millennials have been told since they were in fourth grade that you're not going to have six jobs in your lifetime. You're going to have five careers in your lifetime, three of which don't exist yet.
I was interested to, as you talked about loyalty, is loyalty only defined in terms of length of stay? I mean, or are there other aspects that maybe in a millennial's mind compared to a baby boomer's mind that loyalty means different things?
Well, it's interesting that you brought up loyalty because that's one that organizations are asking about. And I gave you the list of the most common sticking points a little earlier, but loyalty has really been a key focus over the last 3 or 4 months I'm noticing with organizations. So I think it's an important one. And the most important thing, the most shocking thing I tell organizations is that the millennials are the happiest in work surveys and are also planning to leave. So the deal was with the boomers, we got a pension. You qualify for your pension, you get vacation, you get promotions based on how long you stay. So we defined a good employee as someone who stays around. And we rewarded you for staying around and punished you. Even seniority. Longer you're here, you get day shift, new people get the night shift. We've basically said you stay around a long time, we will give you perks and rewards as an incentive. So we definitely, as organizations, have defined loyalty as long tenure.
Is anything wrong with that?
Well, I don't know that there's anything wrong with that. Most organizations don't need people to stay as long as they did. In other words, organizations tend to have more projects and fewer jobs. And that's one of the big changes in society. Fortune magazine back in the 90s had a cover story called The End of the Job. And basically, they defined a job, I think, really well. They defined a job as something that when you go home, you don't worry about it anymore because somebody else takes over where you left off. And when you come back in, you take over where they left off. But you lay your worries at the factory or the warehouse door, and somebody else picks up those worries. And that most of us do projects now that even though we call it a job is in essence a whole combination of smaller projects. And there's nobody to worry about those projects if we're not worrying about them. And so we've ended the job and picked up a whole new dimension of work that's a lot more porous. You don't just go home and have work-life balance because there's work and life. It all mixes together much more. And so organizations often don't need people to stay on because they don't have a job for them. They have projects for them. And when those projects end or the needs of the business change, organizations are much less willing to continue paying somebody until we get through this bad patch.
Which, of course, gets into some issues of maybe work ethic and hours and some of those things. If it's a project and I get my work done at home or do I need to show up to work to get it all done? We'll talk more about that and some of the other sticking points. That's the title of the book, Sticking Points, How to Get Four Generations Working Together in the 12 Places They Come Apart. And as you listen to our conversation, maybe you've got some questions about whether it's dress code or meetings or policies or training or work ethic, those things. We're also going to talk about some steps to work through those generational differences. Hayden Shaw is my guest today. You can join us at 877-93-FAITH. We've got three copies of the book to give away. So sign up for that and leave us a question at 877-933-2484. More in a moment. We're talking workplace, the generational differences today. Hayden Shaw is the leading expert on understanding generational differences and transforming negative work environments and employees. He's a full-time speaker and consultant for Franklin Covey, specializing in areas of leadership and personal productivity, methodologies, and more. He writes regularly, blogs regularly. You can find out about his writing and his work at mygenerationalcoach.com. And he's written a book that we're referencing today. It's from Tyndale. It's called Sticking Points, How to Get Four Generations Working Together in the 12 Places They Come Apart. One of the areas we've been talking about is, you know, some of the areas of loyalty. And I mentioned that one of the big questions is this whole idea of kind of transition that, you know, some of us boomers getting older. I was just mentioning during the break, Hayden, that Don Rupp, one of our longtime employees, the guy who hired me, retiring after 44 years. I've got 38 in, and Ryan is just sort of waiting for me to, you know, pick up my golden parachute or something and move on out. But I know he's not saying that. I'm just I see it in his eyes, though. That's the thing. So,
does he ask about your health regularly?
No,
that's really
no.
What you need to know.
Okay.
How are you feeling today, Buck?
that is kind of an issue. You mentioned that you know, at the outset, if many of the boomers that took early retirement were still in the workforce, our unemployment would be higher. But I assume there's others that are saying, well, I'm going to work longer, right? I feel good. I'm going to keep working longer.
4 out of 5 boomers say they don't want to retire. They just don't want to do the exact same thing they were doing before. And so that's a huge shift. It's been one of the reasons why Generation X has been called the Prince Charles of the workplace. always a gardener, never a king.
That is pretty solid. Yes, we are. All right. So is there any advice for Gen Xers or millennials if, you know, if us boomers don't want to just say it's time to do something else and make room?
I think there are. There's a couple of different things. Matter of fact, I'm doing a session with CVS, their young employees group. You know, a lot of large organizations will have groups of different kind of diversities, and they have a younger employees group. And the big topic for most young employees groups is the very one they ask for, and it's how do we talk to about our boss about promotions? And as I say in the book, it's one of the things that strikes fear into the heart of most managers. Because so, well, what are my opportunities here? Well, short of me dying, and because our organizations are much flatter now, and when we're project based, like we talked about, in a lot of places, there's not the same career ladder. There's a career lattice, and so younger employees need to know how to word their conversations so that the sticking point around feedback and around loyalty doesn't trip them up. And so when they say, "Hey, what are my opportunities?" what they're saying is, I understand that life is a lot like a large video game. What are the different ways you can win that game, and where would I look up the cheat codes online of how one gets ahead here? Whereas their boomer boss is hearing, you want my job, and you're not ready for it yet, and I don't know how to have this conversation with you without discouraging you and making you want to leave. One HR director admitted to me 6 weeks ago. She said, don't announce this out loud, everybody, or I'll deny it. But I do whatever I can to avoid the career progress conversation because I know if I can put them off, they'll stay another year until I have it. And so it's what I say to millennials is just make it easy for your boss to have the conversation and say, I'm not looking to leave. I just want to know how I can grow and develop and how I can find new opportunities to learn.
That's one of the ways and the steps that we can work through some of these generational differences. We'll talk, kind of break them down a little bit more in a moment. I want to touch on one of the other areas, though, that comes up frequently. It seems like the whole area of work ethic. I know when you you speak, oftentimes you, and I guess maybe dress code ties into that, but you speak with some flip-flops on the stage. Talk a little bit about the whole various views on dress code and work ethic.
Well, I think one of the fun things is work ethic is really the most common sticking point. And it really has to do with a couple of things. What does it mean to be on time? And you alluded to it earlier, Neil. Do I have to, if my work is done, do I have to just stay? And so for boomers, the answer was yes. If you want to get ahead around here, you have to be seen. And we pay you for a full day. So because most of the tools to do the job were at the workplace, if you weren't at the workplace, you weren't able to do your job. Today, when for many jobs the tools that allow you to do the job can be done from anywhere, the assumption can't be made that you're not doing your job if you're someplace else. And so, but it takes a long time for us to get over what we were used to or what I had to do. And the younger generations are like, hey, I'm done. My work is done. Are you unhappy? And as one executive in a huge medical organization said, several thousand employees, he said in the Q&A time, all right, what do I do with this? My boomers, if a boomer's late for work, they will call in and they will give you a long explanation as to why they're late. They'll give you an action plan for how it'll never happen again, and they promise to stay late to make up the time. But when my very capable millennials and their exceptional employees, they won't let you know they're going to be late. They'll come in 20 minutes late, and they'll be carrying a Starbucks. Is this just a generational difference, or is this something I should get upset about? Thought it was a great illustration of a truly the difference in perspective. If my work's done, why does it matter?
I'm waiting for the answer, by the way, on that one, because not that I'm looking at Ryan right now, but no, just would like to know, what is the 20 minutes late with the Starbucks answer?
If and we actually talk about it in the third step of the five-step process, and that is, how much do we flex for generational differences and generational preferences? Well, I think ultimately it's a business answer. If it costs you dollars, if it costs you a customer, if you're a university or a church or synagogue, if it costs you donors, it costs you funding, or if it's physically dangerous, nobody's there to protect or watch what happens in the factory, then then it'd be dangerous, then being late is a business necessity. But if we set this arbitrary thing based on life in the farm and the factory from 80 years ago, that we started 8 and we ended 5, and there's not a lot of work that's not getting done, then that really is an arbitrary time left over from when we were burning daylight on the farm, as my farming grandfather used to say, or in life in a factory where you weren't earning your pay. But when we live in a project world where our tools aren't at work, we need to be measuring not the hours a person puts in, but the output they put out. Peter Drucker, by the way, said that 50 years ago, the father of modern management, said 50 years ago, quit focusing on inputs, not outputs, and we're still stuck in that old management conundrum.
Wow. When I hit those five areas, you mentioned flexing, but you mentioned dangerous, so that would be a good time to maybe transition, just say a word about dress code, because I know you've talked about if you're working in a factory, you probably don't wear flip-flops.
Yeah, as I like to joke, steel-toed flip-flops completely defeat the purpose. And I don't, as I like to say, it's a little gross. So if you're eating, hold your breath here. But if I don't want to see a guy in flip-flops rolling my burrito, with a little grease under the toenails, no. Not only that, but there's health issues there. And in medicine, the doctor has to scrub up both feet and hands. That's not efficient nor effective. And so there are some real business necessities around places where it doesn't make sense to wear flip-flops. But I asked my mother-in-law, who got macular degeneration and moved in with us. She lives downstairs. We live upstairs. I said to her as we all head off to church together, does it bother you that your grandkids show up at church in flip-flops and shorts? And she said, no, because they like to go. I made a huge deal with my oldest son about having to wear a shirt and tie long after people let their boomer children dress more casually. And it was a fight that I should never have had. It's been hard to get him to attend. in his adult life. And I just made a big deal about smaller things. As long as your kids are legally dressed and like to go, hey, I'm just glad they're there. And I think that's probably a healthier attitude. Is there a real business necessity? If you're going to lose customers, then change your dress code. And to younger employees who are listening, if you got a traditionalist or boomer boss that has a particular view of dress and you don't want to comply with that, that's okay. It's a free country. But don't get upset when they don't think of you as ready or professional yet. I mean, there are choices we make. Our dress communicates something, and it may communicate different things to different generations, but figure out what the business necessity is. If you want to move ahead, then dress like the people who will make that decision. Don't dress like the people you're going to see later that evening. It's a business necessity.
Good words from Hayden Shaw. We're talking about his book, Sticking Points, How to Get Four Generations Working Together in the Places They Come Apart. And we welcome your call to the conversation, 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. So we sort of alluded to a couple of these steps in terms of how to work through these generational differences. You mentioned flex, one of them, about agreeing how to accommodate different approaches. There are five. Let's review those, Hayden.
You bet. The first step is just to acknowledge it. And that's really what we've been doing all call long, is acknowledging that generational differences really are a hidden factor in our ability to get along together, to innovate together, to work together. And as long as, you know, the research shows that we tend to stay with our generation at work. Unless our cube is next to each other or our spot in the warehouse is next to each other, we don't have a lot of interaction with other generations. And so simply acknowledging that those differences are there and then breaking down that lack of interaction and then moving on to step number two. Once we've acknowledged it, then we get people talking about it so that they can then appreciate the different generations. So first we acknowledge, and secondly we build appreciation, because in appreciation, we focus on the why, not the what. We don't focus on the what is different. You can find all those, you know, that's what people are complaining about in their own generation. You know how those younger people are. You know how those older people are. We need to figure out why they look at the world differently, why they answer the same question differently. And then once we appreciate the why, then we can figure out how to flex to accommodate different approaches. Then we can figure out, oh, okay, I see why you think this makes sense to come in late with the Starbucks. Okay, well, is that really a business necessity, or is that just my generational preference? Once we've acknowledged it, once we've appreciated it, then we can flex around what we talked about earlier. The fourth step is leverage, to actually go beyond just working it out, dealing with the conflict, and actually turn that conflict, that sticking point, into the opportunity to get the different generations sticking together. And that's where we look at ways to maximize or leverage the strengths each generation brings to things. And then lastly, resolve. Some generational issues can't just be resolved by flexing and accommodating each other. Sometimes we have to make a decision on how we're going to go forward. And so we actually you can't have four different varieties of training in the same session. You have to figure out how you're going to flex as much as possible and then resolve what you're going to do. Doesn't apply to all sticking points. Some of them you can just handle with flexing, but it does apply, that last step, resolve, does apply to some of them. You just have to make a decision and move forward in a way that accommodates the different generational preferences as best we can.
Hayden, before we take a break, say a little bit more about, we were talking about appreciating, focusing on the why, not the what. You talk about how that's so difficult, and people really have to work on that. Give us some examples of talking to why as opposed to what.
Let me give you two that we've talked about so far. Understanding the why. Oh, baby boomers stayed in organizations because there were perks that went along with staying longer. You moved up the career ladder. You got more vacation. Your pension was vested, and it was worth more. There were perks that no longer exist today. Everyone moves more often than they did before. And therefore, the millennials, while they do have more jobs, because the larger job market has changed and the way we do work has changed. And so those explanations were why's people think the way they do rather than what's. What's would be, you know, the boomers stay this long, the Xers stay this long, the millennials stay this long. Look how bad the millennials look when we actually put the raw numbers out there. If we don't understand the larger why, then it's easy to get all stereotypy and to focus on the what's, and what's divide and why's unite. Why's help us begin to have useful conversations. What's end up just being name-calling and mud-throwing.
Aidan Shaw is author of the book Sticking Points, How to Get Four Generations Working Together and the 12 Places They Come Apart. He's researched generations and helped clients regarding generational differences for over 20 years. He's author of Franklin Covey's best-selling workshops, Leading Across Generations and Working Across Generations. He's worked with thousands of companies and nonprofits and government agencies and doing consulting and leadership management, change, and generations. And we'll talk more with Aidan in a moment. If you'd like to join the conversation, it's 877-933-2484. Or if you prefer not to use the phone and want to use some other device, you can do email myfaithradio.com and then click on Connecting Faith. And we'll continue with Aidan in just a moment.
Hi, I'm Dick Whitworth, General Manager of Faith Radio. Why do you listen to this station? Well, Manzi wrote to us and said this: I love listening to Faith Radio because of the tremendously encouraging and challenging teaching, which keeps me on track, allowing me to daily choose to live for Jesus. My faith has deepened, my love walk is stronger, and my everyday relationships are getting better daily. Thank you for all you do. Manzi, thank you for your note, and thank you for sharing why you listen to Faith Radio.
It's talk radio with a surprising twist.
A lot of us go to church and we hear sermons and go, that's great. How do you do it? The hard part for me is I don't know how to do it, and some days I don't want to do it. So I think we bring some reality here if we all want to be Christ-like, but what works, what doesn't. And we get to hear stories of people where God is exalted. It's not their story, it's God's story in them, and that's a huge deal.
It's not just information, it's transformation. Faith Radio.
Past the hour, talking sticking points today, how to get four generations working together in the 12 places they come apart. Hayden Shaw has written this great book, wonderful resource. Hayden's a popular speaker and generational expert, business consultant, and teaching us today on areas of generational differences. We've been kind of reviewing some of the ways that we have differences and how to work through some of those. Hayden, I was wondering if this is... I should mention, first, James checked in on Twitter, and he says if he's going to miss work, he calls rather than texting or emailing to ensure the message is received. Grace had put out a little mini survey just to see what people. So is that something where, the use of social media may not be always the wisest in terms of your career success?
It's a business necessity versus a generational preference. And so if you want to have career success, then I would say know your audience. And if your boss texts regularly and checks texts regularly and will respond to text so you could verify they had received your text, then I would say text away. You can engage in your generational preference. But if your boss interprets that as lack of professionalism and that you don't care enough to make sure the message comes through, then I would say know your audience, and it's a business necessity for you to flex your personal communication preference and adjust it for the for your supervisor's communication preference. The key thing is when we appreciate the whys, not the whats, we can quit letting it burn, get us all burned up when we flex for somebody else's preference. It really is putting diversity and diversity and inclusion work that organizations have been doing for the last 20 years, it really is putting it into action day in and day out to simply flex for somebody else's generational preferences when they're not going to cost us a customer or a funding or dollars.
And communication, I guess, has always been kind of a challenge, isn't it? Regardless of what generation it is, right, to interact effectively.
Well, I think anytime you work with groups, communication will be one of the biggest things, that most common things they bring up as barriers. And so anything we can do to ensure better communication will make us more successful in our career. Mrs. Shaw and I are, we have a millennial graduating from high school tonight and 200 people coming over this Saturday as an open house. And we sat down Sunday morning and made a long list of what needs to be done. And she thought that I was going to text my son, speaking of text, and let him know that that list was there. And I thought I left it right there on the island, and that she was going to be going over that with him, and discovered when I got back last night that he had not seen that list. And so no matter how hard you try to communicate, even if you're of the same generation, and even if you love the person with all your heart, communication is not the easiest thing to do.
I don't
and she will, as she would jump on the radio and point out, I'm sure today if we gave her the chance.
Yes, which I don't know if that sounded like a public apology, but it certainly had the leanings of that, I thought.
So. it was definitely a miscommunication of which I could have been clear.
Which reminds you, these principles are probably pretty helpful within the family, isn't it? I mean, as you said, generational differences have been around, you know, since the beginning of time, I guess, but how to work through some of those and understanding and maybe a little bit of flexing would go a long way.
Just like growing up in my household, I really understood my father a lot better when I realized, okay, he's coming from within a particular window of time. And, all right, I understand him and what he means and what he's intending. And I'm not taking that personally as a criticism anymore. I'm taking it as he's speaking from his generation about a whole other generation's way of dealing with and expressing their faith. Got it. And it helps with my own kids. Oh, we are going to take pictures now that my family's all together. My son and his wife have flown in. My brother and his family come back every 3 years from China for a visit. And so we're all together. We're going to take pictures. And 6 years ago, my kids came downstairs all dressed up and ready for that picture of my parents' 50th anniversary, which was all happening at the same time. And they came down in flip-flops, and I said, go upstairs and change. We need dress shoes. They said, these are our dress shoes. And here they were in leather flip-flops rather than Old Navy $7 vibrant blue flip-flops. And so I said, those are not dress shoes. And so let me tell this story myself. My fine bride called down and said, pick your battles. Everybody wears dress flip-flops. Just pick your battles. I know, but my parents are not going to like it. She said, pick your battles. Sure enough, we got down there, and all of my brother's kids were in flip-flops. And my younger brother was in flip-flops because we were taking a picture out in the woods. And she looked at me with that look that says, you know, sometimes I'm right, you know. And it was a great reminder to me that it's easy to make our generational preferences, or in this case, my parents' generational preferences, a bigger issue than they need to be. And my parents may have talked to each other about their flip-flops, but they never said a word. They were just happy to have all the grandkids in one photo.
Yeah. We'll work on the battles that are worth the fighting on that. I was curious to know if this is an issue looks differently in a larger company or organization than a smaller one. I mean, if it's only, you know, five people working versus 500.
Yes. And that answer has two parts to it. Sometimes, because we know each other well in a smaller organization, it actually makes it easier because we know each other well. We learn the whys to the differences. Oh, you don't intend to say that I'm not a hard worker. You just define hard work differently than I do. Okay, I know your intent, and so I understand the why behind your what. And sometimes if a person has their own personal generational preference and they get stuck in that, and especially if they're the boss. Heavens, I was with one group and of small business owners, a lot of shops that were 3 to 7 people. And a guy said to me, if I own the place and I want it done this way, then it's my sandbox. I can do whatever I want. I said, that's right. That's right. Exactly right. You can. The younger generation won't like it. He said, so what do I do to get him to do it the way I want him to do it? I said, sir, and this was in front of 400 people, I have no idea how to answer your question. Because what you're really saying is, I want it done my generation's way. I want to hire younger people who often I can hire cheaper, and I want to make them do it my way without quitting. Give me the answer to that. And I said, I don't know. You could ask me. You could ask me how to duplicate myself on a copier, and I couldn't answer it any easier than I can answer that impossible question. How do you get it your way and make somebody else like it? I don't know.
does keep you traveling, though, doesn't it?
It does. Now, in other organizations, in larger organizations, there's often a greater focus on diversity and inclusion, or at least a greater focus on political correctness.
Sure. Good insights from Hayden Shaw. Hayden, what's the workplace going to look like, 10 years, 5 years from now? How will that, will these factors be more pronounced by then?
You bet, because technology is growing. There's already books coming out on the implications of big data, not just how we run political elections or try to pick players on our baseball teams, like Moneyball, book and movie, illustrate. But big data is also shaping the way we work. And so that technology changes things. The simple craft printers now, where you can print physical objects. Well, that will have big implications in workplaces. We can begin to work from we can begin to do modeling of design from different places because we can simply print it out on a printer in our home. And so the workplace is shifting as technology is shifting, and the amount of innovation and collaboration and creativity that's necessary, that is intensifying, and therefore the amount of bringing fewer barriers and more open spaces to talk and interact is definitely the trend in workplace design. So it's all about connectivity, and it's all about getting information back and forth faster to each other. That is definitely the workplace of the future.
Well, we've had a good time providing some connectivity and talking about the workplace today and in the future, and particularly about some of the sticking points that affect us, how to get four generations working together in the 12 places they come apart from. Hayden Shaw has been sharing with us today, who's a generational expert, a business consultant speaker. He works with organizations, businesses, government agencies, and he's sounding amazingly calm for knowing that he's got to get ready for 200 millennials showing up at his door tomorrow. But I bet this afternoon it'll all just work out swimmingly.
I have a millennial I'm paying in the yard right now, and so work is happening even as we talk, Neil.
So you've learned a few things over your years, I think. Pay a millennial, and you'll be happy, something like that. Hayden, it's good to visit with you again, and look forward to connecting down the road.
Thanks so much for having me again.
It's mygenerationalcoach.com is a website you can check out Hayden's writing or speaking and find out about his regular blogging and get the book as well. Sticking Points from Tyndale. Hayden Shaw, guest today on Connecting Faith. If you missed part of the program or want to pass it on to a friend, you can always share the podcast by going to our website, myfaithradio.com, and then click on Connecting Faith, and we'll enjoy the program again tomorrow. Thanks.